afternoon. Hope everyone had a good week or 2 weeks and returned from the feast safely, hopefully. Today's message is titled Unto the Third and Fourth Generations. And if you will, turn with me to Ezekiel chapter 18, verse 1. We'll go ahead and take a look at it. And for most of the Old Testament scriptures today, I'm going to be reading out of the Scriptures 2009 version. Then I think I've got one or so from the New Testament that's from a Faithful Version translation. Both translations I personally enjoy, and they're both free digitally. That's the main reason I use them, so people don't have to pay to play and follow along. But it shouldn't be too terribly far off from any other translation. But in Ezekiel chapter 18, verse 1 and 2, it says, "And the word of Jehovah came to me, saying, What do you mean when you use this proverb concerning the land of Israel, saying, The fathers have eaten sour grapes, and the children's teeth are blunted?" Well, this had been a saying of Israel during the time leading up to the Babylonian captivity. And it's the saying essentially is a way of passing blame on the previous generations for the evils of the day brought by God's judgment, first against the northern tribes and then against Judah. But as we see in Deuteronomy chapter 7, Deuteronomy 7, verse 9 through 11, "And you shall know that Jehovah, your Elohim, he is Elohim, trustworthy, El, guarding covenant and loving commitment for 1,000 generations to those who love him and to those who guard his commands, but repaying those who hate him to their face to destroy them. He does not delay so to do with him who hates him. He repays him to his face, and you shall guard the command, the laws, and the right rulings which I command you today to do them." God's commandments are a roadmap to life well lived. Paraphrasing what Moses said, to obey is life, and to disobey is death. I believe this saying, the sour grape saying, comes from a misunderstanding of sorts, or misapplication of from the second commandment, which comes with a warning. In Exodus chapter 20 and verse 4 through 6, we'll look at it. It says, "You do not make for yourself a carved image or a likeness of that which is in the heavens above, or that which is in the earth beneath, or which is in the waters underneath the earth. You do not bow yourself to them nor serve them. For I, Jehovah, your Elohim, am a jealous God, visiting the crookedness of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but loving commitment to those to thousands, to those who love me and guard my commands." At face value, it almost seems like this is saying that if one's great-grandparents or grandparents hate God, then the third or fourth generation, having done nothing, would be punished. How does this play out in history, though? We can start by looking at it. I'm going to be covering a lot of historical facts here, and you know, you don't have to turn to all of them if you don't want to. There's going to be a lot of quick movement, but it should be all fairly chronological and easy to follow along with. Mainly just seeing kind of how it actually plays out, and does God just start zapping people because, you know, great-grandpappy Winston did something wrong. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 16, we find law that God passed on to the children of Israel from Moses, stating explicitly, fathers are not put to death for their children, and children are not put to death for their fathers. Each is to die for his own sin. And this leads to my first point. God does not punish the children for the sins of the fathers. God is a righteous judge. He would never punish the innocent for the sins of another. We as a people find it far easier, or all too easy, to blame our wicked ancestors and our foolish descendants, you know, every generation but mine, for the state of separation that we have with God. Yet it is our sins which separate us from God, the royal us, if you will. You know, you could just plug whatever nation or group you belong to. Furthermore, as we see in verse 6 of Exodus, that God gives mercy to those who are faithful in keeping his word. Again, 20 verse 6 says, but showing loving commitment, which can also be translated as mercy or kindness, to thousands, to those who love me and guard or keep my commands. God's patience, mercy, and righteous judgment is made undeniably clear in the scriptures from creation through to the first giving of the law and binding of the covenant with Israel, and continues following all the way through the end of Revelation chapter 22. And don't worry, Jack, I'm not going to be covering all of that today. However, we will look at some examples of God's patience and mercy as it applies to the second commandment of God. And again, just keep in mind throughout that God knows the end from the beginning. God's not surprised and God's not reactionary. Exodus chapter 20, verse 18, we have at the giving of the law, all the people saw the thunders and the lightning flashes and the voice of the shofar and the mountain smoking. And all the people saw it and trembled and stood at a distance and said to Moses, you speak with us and we hear, but let not Elohim speak to us, lest we should die. And Moses said to the people, do not fear, for Elohim has come to prove you in order that his fear be before you, so that you do not sin. So the people stood at a distance, but Moses drew near the thick darkness where Elohim was. Israel heard these Ten Commandments with their own ears. They saw it, they trembled, and stood at a distance. God did not do this so that they would know that he is. God, who knows the end from the beginning, leaves no room for excuses of ignorance for those with whom he is working. Continuing in the book of Exodus, in verse 22, and Jehovah said to Moses, say to the children of Israel, you yourselves have seen that I have spoken to you from the heavens. You do not make besides me mighty ones of silver. You do not make mighty ones of gold for yourselves. Again, God knows the end from the beginning. His mercy is sure. His position is clear. God goes on to list his laws for the children of Israel, which Moses writes in the book of the covenant. Then God gives instructions to confirm the covenant with Israel after they have heard the law in chapter 24. In 24, verse 1, it says, and Moses, and to Moses he said, God said to come up to Jehovah, you, Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 elders of Israel, you shall bow yourselves from a distance. But Moses shall draw near to Jehovah by himself. Let him not draw near, nor let the people go up with him. And Moses came and related to the people the words of Jehovah and all the right rulings. And the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which Jehovah has spoken, we shall do. And Moses wrote down all the words of Jehovah and rose up early in the morning and built an altar or slaughtering place at the foot of the mountain and 12 standing columns for the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sent young men of the children of Israel, and they offered ascending offerings and slaughterings of peace to Jehovah of bulls. And Moses took half the blood, and he put it into basins, and half the blood he sprinkled onto the altar. And he took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they all said, all that Jehovah has spoken, we shall do and obey. And 24 verse 8, and Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people, and he said, see, the blood of the covenant which Jehovah has made with you concerning all these words. There was no spectators for this event. It was a covenant that required active participation. The blood was on the altar, and the blood was on the children of Israel. In verse 9 of Exodus 24, and Moses went up, and Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel, and they saw the Elohim of Israel, and under his feet, like paved work of sapphire stone, like the heavens for brightness. This is the sea of glass which is in the throne of God. Yet he did not stretch his hand against the chiefs of the children of Israel, and they saw Elohim, and they ate and they drank. While we don't need to turn there, even though it speaks of an earthly ruler, the wisdom of the first verse of the 23rd chapter of Proverbs would greatly apply in this situation, where, speaking again of an earthly ruler, the advice is given, when you sit down to eat with a ruler, look well what is before you. You know, basically, mind your P's and Q's. You know, if you say the wrong thing, you might lose your life. How much more so should you look well what is before you and how you're conducting yourself in the presence of the ruler, God Almighty, sitting at his table. Continuing on in Exodus 24:12, and Jehovah said to Moses, come up with me on the mountain and be here, and I will give you the tablets of stone and the Torah which I command you, or the law which I have written to teach them. And Moses rose up with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up to the mountain of Elohim. And he said to the elders, wait here until we come back to see you. And see, Aaron and Hur are with you. Whatever or whoever has matters, let him go to them. And Moses went up the mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. And the steam or glory of God dwelt on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. And on the seventh day, he called for Moses out of the midst of the cloud. And the appearance of the steam of Jehovah was like a consuming fire on top of the mountain, before the eyes of the children of Israel. And Moses went up to the midst of the cloud and went up into the mountain. And it came to be that Moses was on that mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. Then in chapters 25 through 31, you know, in case you're wondering why I'm focusing on this portion of the Bible and the giving of laws, you know, feast is over, but Passover's just right around the corner. We need to start keeping our focus on the next thing ahead of us. But anyways, in chapters 25 through 31, Moses gives the direction, or is given the directions for construction of the ark, the tabernacle, as well as the priestly garments, the holy articles for the tabernacle services, as well as being given the tables of stone with the commandments of God written on them by God to be placed in the Ark of the Covenant. As Moses was receiving these laws and directions from God, the children of Israel were already breaking the commandment, and this breaking the covenant and this commandment, the second commandment, by forming the image of a golden calf. And again, God, knowing exactly what they were going to do, made sure to tell them right before all this took place, don't make an image of me in gold or silver. Next is chapter 32, verse 1. And when the people saw that Moses was so long and come down from the mountain, you know, again, he is writing down all these instructions God gave him. He wasn't just up there relaxing. The people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, arise and make us mighty ones who will go before us. For Moses, this man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And Aaron said to them, you know, Aaron's the man left in charge, take off your golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, your daughters, and bring them to me. And the people took off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he took them from their hand and formed it into with an engraving tool and made a molded calf and said, this is your mighty one, O Israel, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. And Aaron saw and built an altar before it. And Aaron called out and said, tomorrow is a festival to Jehovah. And they rose early the next day and offered ascending offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And Jehovah said to Moses, get down, for the people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have already turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made themselves a molded calf and have bowed down themselves before it and slaughtered to it and said, this is your mighty one, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. God and Moses had been very clear as to the law and the covenant, which in chapter 24, verse 7, we saw, And he took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, all that Jehovah has spoken, we shall do and obey. In chapter 32, verse 9, and Jehovah said to Moses, I have seen this people. It is a stiff-necked people. And now let me alone that my wrath might burn against them, and I consume them, and I'll make of you a great nation. God had every right to destroy the nation of Israel by the covenant which he just made with him just 40 days earlier. And he too has the power and the right to lay hold of the earth and even all creation and shake us like a big cosmic etch-a-sketch should he choose. And no one could stay his hand. We have already the breaking of the first three commandments of God here in the 40 days, just as Moses is receiving these instructions. But Moses pled for the mercy of God, and God gave it. But they will have to answer to God one day. In chapter 32, verse 30, and it came to be on the next day, Moses said to the people, this is after he came and ground the idol to dust, you have sinned a great sin, and now I am going up to Jehovah, if I might atone for your sins. And Moses returned to Jehovah and said, oh, these people have sinned a great sin, and made for themselves a mighty one of gold. And now, if you will forgive their sin, but if not, please blot me out of your book of life which you have written. And Jehovah said to Moses, whosoever has sinned against me, I blot him out of my book. And now go and lead this people to the place of which I have spoken to you. See, my messenger goes before you, and in the day of my visitation, I shall visit their sin upon them. And again, I'm not condemning anybody. It's not my place. But all of us will one day have to stand before God and explain ourselves to him. And that's all the wicked, even the ones that he's not blotted out yet, will be there to be separated. God shows mercy, but in the day of his visitation, the day of Jehovah, all mankind shall stand and be judged according to our works. The sheep for sheep, goats for goats. Every tear shall be wiped, and yet there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. We don't all get the same answer. Next is chapter 33, verse 1. And Jehovah said to Moses, come up from here, you and all the people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt, to the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, to your seed I give it, and I shall send my messenger before you. And again, that's the rock which followed them. If you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1 through 5, it says, now I do not wish you to be ignorant, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud, which was on the mountain, and passed through the sea. All were baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea. They all ate the same spiritual meat. They all drank from the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them, God was not pleased, for their bodies were strewn throughout the wilderness. Continuing in verse 2 of Exodus 33. And I shall drive out the Canaanite, the Amorite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite to the land flowing to a land flowing with milk and honey. For I do not go up in your midst, because you are a stiff-necked people, lest I consume you on the way. And the people heard this evil word, or pronouncement, and they mourned, and nobody put on his ornaments. And Jehovah said to Moses, say to the children of Israel, you are a stiff-necked people. Should I go up in your midst? For one moment I would consume you. God's telling them it's for your own good. But in verse 12, and Moses said to Jehovah, see, you are saying to me, bring up this people, but you have not made known to me whom you would send with me. Though you have said, I know you by name, you have also found favor in my eyes. And now, please, if I found favor in your eyes, please show me your way, and let me know you, so that I may find favor in your eyes and consider that this nation is your people. And he said, my presence does go, and I shall give you rest. And he said to him, if your presence is not going, do not lead us from here. For how then shall it be known that I have found favor in your eyes, I and your people, except that you go with us? Then we shall be distinguished, I and your people, from all the people who are upon the face of the earth. And Jehovah said to Moses, even this word which you have spoken I shall do, for you have found favor in my eyes, I know you by name. Then he said, please show me your glory. And he said, I shall cause my goodness to pass before you, and I shall proclaim the name of Jehovah before you. And I shall favor him whom I favor, and have compassion on him whom I have compassion. But he said, you are unable to see my face, for no man does and lives. Then, dropping down to verse 4 of chapter 34, Moses is again given the laws and commandments anew. And it says, and he cut two tablets of stone like the first ones. Moses rose early in the morning and went up to Mount Sinai as Jehovah had commanded him. And he took the tablets of stone as in his hand. And Jehovah came down in a cloud and stood before him and proclaimed the name Jehovah. And Jehovah passed before him and proclaimed, Jehovah, Jehovah, a compassionate and showing favor, patient and great and loving commitment and truth, watching over the loving commitment for thousands, forgiving crookedness and transgression and sin, but by no means leaving unpunished, visiting the crookedness of the fathers upon the children and the children's children to the third and fourth generations. And as we know, God's trying to tell us something when he keeps repeating it. And we'll figure out what that is as we continue. And Moses hurried and bowed himself to the earth and did obeisance, or worshipped, and said, if I have now found favors in your eyes, O Jehovah, I pray, let Jehovah go out in our midst, even though we are a stiff-necked people, and forgive our crookedness and our sins, and take us as your inheritance. And he said, see, I am making a covenant before all your people. I am going to do wonders such as have not been done in all the earth, nor in any nation. And all the people among whom you are, you shall see the work of Jehovah. For what I am doing with you is awesome. Verse 11, guard what I command you today. See, I am driving out before you the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Guard yourself, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land where you are going, lest it be a snare in your midst. But break down their slaughtering places, smash their pillars, cut down their ashram, for you do not bow yourselves to another mighty one, for Jehovah, whose name is jealous, is a jealous God. Lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they whore after their mighty ones, and slaughter to their mighty ones, and one of them invites you, and you eat of his slaughterings, and you take his daughters for your sons, and his daughters whore after their mighty ones, and make your sons whore after their mighty ones. Do not make a molded mighty one for yourself. Here God renewed his covenant with these stiff-necked, stubborn people, and they sinned no more. Of course, we know that's not true. They continued to try God's patience and rebel time and time again, as we see later in their reaction with the scouts, that they only had a surface level of faith in God, despite his great works and impossible mercy. Again, put yourself in this position where you have ultimate power over these people and they keep snubbing you. In Numbers chapter 14, verse 1 through 4, we see that the congregation, after report came back from the scouts, lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And the children of Israel grumbled against Moses and against Aaron, and all the congregation said to him, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in the wilderness. And they will get their wish there. And why is Jehovah bringing us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become prey? would it not be better for us to turn back to Egypt? And they said to each other, let us appoint a leader, and let us turn back to Egypt. And brethren, this is what democracy looks like. To quote a chant that we hear all the time, the people here rebel more than disobedience. They blaspheme God's intentions and character. And then in verse 6 of Numbers 14, and Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, were among those who spied out the land, tore their garments, and they spoke to all the congregation of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to spy out is exceedingly good land. If Jehovah has delighted in us, he shall bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which is flowing with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against Jehovah, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their defense is turned away from them, and Jehovah is with us. Do not fear them. And again, but the people of the congregation said to stone them with stones. And the glory of God appeared in the tent of appointment before the children of Israel. And Jehovah said to Moses, how long shall I be scorned by these people? And how long shall I not be trusted by them? With all the signs which I have done in their midst, let me strike them with pestilence and disinherit them, and make of you a greater nation and mightier than they are. And again, when God would have destroyed them, Moses, who they just wanted to stone, pleads with God for mercy for these rebellious children. And again, God knows the end from the beginning. God is not surprised by this, and God knew that he would continue to have mercy and patience with them. I think he's testing Moses to see what he would do with these people. You know, how many of us in Moses' place wouldn't have just said, yeah, sounds good to me. We'll start over. I know I'd fail that test. And Numbers chapter 14, verse 15, now, if you shall kill these people as one man, then the nations, Moses pleads, which have heard of your report shall speak, saying, because Jehovah was not able to bring this people into the land which he swore to give them, therefore he slew them in the wilderness. Now I pray you, let the power of Jehovah be great, as you have spoken, saying, Jehovah is patient and of great loving commitment, forgiving crookedness and transgressions. Again, but by no means leaving unpunished, visiting the crookedness of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation. Please forgive the crookedness of this people according to the greatness of your loving commitment, as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. Verse 20, and Jehovah said, I shall forgive according to your word. But truly, as I live, all the earth is filled with the glory of Jehovah. For none of these men which have seen my glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tried me now these 10 times and have disobeyed my voice, shall see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor any of those who scorned me to see it. God would not destroy them in this moment, yet none of these would enter into the promise. Their children, whom they accused God of endangering, under the careful guidance of Joshua and Caleb, the faithful scouts would, but the rest would all fall in the wilderness. In Judges, after they enter into the promised land and are supposed to take it over, Judges chapter 2, verse 1 through 5, we have an appearance of the angel of Jehovah, whom I believe is Christ. Judges 2, verse 1, and the messenger of Jehovah came up from Gilgal to Bocham, which is the place of weeping, is what it means. And we'll see why here, and said, I led you up from Egypt and brought you to the land which I swore to your fathers, and I said, I do not break my covenant with you, even after all that they'd put him through. As for you, you do not make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land. Break down their slaughtering places, but you have not obeyed my voice. What is this that you have done? Therefore, I also said, I am not driving them out before you, and they shall be adversaries, and their mighty ones shall be a snare to you. And it came to be, when the messenger of Jehovah spoke all these words, that the children of Israel and all the people lifted up their voice and wept. So they called the name of that place Bochim, the place of weeping, and they made slaughterings or offerings to God. In chapter 2, verse 7, it continues on and says, and the people served Jehovah all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen the great works of Jehovah that he'd done for Israel. And Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of Jehovah, died at 110 years old. And they buried him within the border of his inheritance in Timnah-Heres in the mountains of Ephraim on the north side of Mount Gaash. And all the children were likewise gathered to their fathers, and another generation arose after them who did not know Jehovah, nor the work which he had done for Israel. Then the children of Israel did evil in the eyes of Jehovah, and served Baals, and forsook Jehovah of the Elohim of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, and went after other mighty ones of the people who were all around them, and bowed down to them, and provoked Jehovah. So they forsook Jehovah, and served Baal and Ashtaroths, and the displeasure of Jehovah burned against Israel. Therefore he gave them into the hands of plunderers who despoiled them, and he sold them into the hands of their enemies all around. And they were unable to stand before their enemies any longer. Wheresoever they went out, the hand of Jehovah was against them for evil, as Jehovah had spoken, and as Jehovah had sworn to them. And they were distressed greatly. Those that were afflicted here would have been the third and fourth generation after those who God had left in the wilderness. But again, their own wickedness was visited upon them, not the sins of their fathers. In Judges chapter 2, verse 16, it says, Then Jehovah raised up rulers who saved them from the hand of those that plundered them. However, they did not listen to their rulers either, but went whoring after other mighty ones, bowed down before them. They soon turned aside from the way which their fathers walked, in obeying the commands of Jehovah. They did not so. And when Jehovah raised up rulers for them, Jehovah was with the ruler and saved them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the ruler. For Jehovah had compassion on their groaning because of those who oppressed them. And it came to be when the ruler was dead, they would turn back and do more corruptly than their fathers. And they go after their mighty ones to serve them and to bow down. They did not refrain from their practices and from their stubborn way. And the displeasure of Jehovah burned against Israel. And he said, because this nation has transgressed my covenant, my command to their fathers, and have not obeyed my voice, I shall no longer drive out before them any of the nations which Joshua left when he died, in order to try Israel by them, and whether they would guard the way of Jehovah, to walk in them as their fathers guarded them, or not. God, being righteous and a fair judge, did not show favor to any generation. As Moses warned the children of Israel who had grown up in the wilderness before crossing the Jordan into Canaan, in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 1, Moses said, guard to do every command which I command you today, that you may live, and shall increase and go in and possess the land which Jehovah swore to your fathers. And you shall remember Jehovah your Elohim led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you, to prove you, to know what was in your heart, whether to you would guard his commands or not. And he humbled you and let you suffer hunger, and he fed you with manna which you did not know nor your fathers know, to make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word which comes out of the mouth of Jehovah. Again, God's testing them all those years to see if they would stand up and use that stubbornness in a good way to stick to God's ways, or if they'd fold like a cheap card table. And time again, they proved to fold in the face of adversity. Yet, they would still continue to stumble, turn away from God, serving other mighty ones which were not God. In Judges chapter 3, verse 5 through 7, we see where it begins. It says the children of Israel dwelt in the midst of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, and took their daughters to be their wives, and gave their daughters to their sons, and they served their mighty ones. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of Jehovah, and forgot Jehovah their Elohim, and served other Baals and Asheroths. Verse 9, and when the children of Israel cried out to Jehovah, Jehovah raised up a savior among the children of Israel who saved them, Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. And the land of Israel, in verse 11, had rest for 40 years. Then Othniel of Kenaz died, and the children of Israel yet again did evil in the sight of Jehovah, and made Jehovah made Eglon, sovereign of Moab, strong against Israel, because they had done evil before his eyes. And this just continues right on through the book of Judges. You have Ehud and Shamgar, and then after they died, the children of Israel yet again did evil in the sight of Jehovah, and so he sent the Midianites. And you have Gideon, Tola, Yair, and the children again did evil in the sight of, in the eyes of Jehovah, chapter 10, verse 6, and served the Baals and Asheroths, and the mighty ones of Aram, and the mighty ones of Sidon, and the mighty ones of Moab, and the mighty ones of the children of Ammon. They're expanding now. They're not just worshiping the gods of the Canaanites. They're going further out and further out, importing more and more of these. The mighty ones of the Philistines, and forsook Jehovah, and did not serve him. And then in chapter 10, verse 10, the children of Israel cried out again to Jehovah, saying, we have sinned against you. Behold, we have forsaken our Elohim and served Baals. So Jehovah said to the children of Israel, was it not from the Egyptians and from the Amorites and from the children of Ammon and from the Philistines that I saved you? And the Sidonians and Amalek and Midian oppressed you, and you cried out to me, and I saved you from their hand? But you have forsaken me and served other mighty ones. Therefore, I do not save you again. Go and cry to the mighty ones which you have chosen, and let them save you in your time of distress. And the children of Israel said to Jehovah, we have sinned. Do to us whatever is good in your eyes. Only please deliver us today, please. So they put away the foreign mighty ones which were in their midst, the foreign gods, and served Jehovah. And his being was grieved for the trouble of Israel. And again, I wish I could say, and they lived happily ever after. But again, you can keep going through Judges. In Judges 13, verse 1, and again, children of Israel did evil in the sight of Jehovah. So Jehovah gave them into the hands of Philistines for 40 years. And then in Judges chapter 17, this is chronologically before a lot of the stuff with the other judges. This is not too terribly long after children of Israel had come in there. We have a story of a man from the hill country of Ephraim, in Judges 17, verse 1. And there is a man from the hill country of Ephraim whose name was Micah. And he said to his mother, who had heard cursing, the 1,100 pieces of silver which were taken from you, on which you put a curse even in my ear, saying, look, the silver is with me, I took it. And his mother says, blessed of Jehovah be my son. And he gave back the 1,100 pieces of silver to his mother. And his mother said, I truly set apart the silver from my hand to Jehovah for my son. For what? To make a carved image and a molded image. And now I give it back to you. And he gave the silver back to his mother, and his mother took 200 pieces of silver and gave it to a silversmith, and he made it into a carved image and a molded image, and they were in the house of Micah. Now the man Micah had a house of mighty ones, a house of false idols and false gods, and made a shoulder garment, which the priests used, the Unum and Thunum, and house idols. And he ordered one of his sons, who became his priest. Again, this is right in the down the road from Joshua. OK, Continuing on, we find out about a young Levite who's coming out of Bethlehem of Judah. And skipping down to verse 12 of 17. Then Micah ordained the Levite, and the young man became his priest. And he was in the house of Micah. And Micah said to himself, "Now I know that Jehovah does good to me, since I have a Levite as a priest." In 18, verse 1, in those days there was no sovereign in Israel, which isn't quite true. God was the sovereign in Israel. And in those days the tribe of Dan was seeking an inheritance for itself to dwell in, for until that day all their inheritance among the tribes of Israel had not yet fallen to them. And the children of Dan sent 5 men of their clan, brave men, from Sora and Ethel, to spy out the land and search it. And they said to him, "Go search the land." So they went to the mountains of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, and spent the night there. And when they were in the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young Levite, and turned aside and said to him, "Who brought you here? What are they doing? What are you doing in this place, and what do you have here?" And he said to him, "Micah did such and such for me, and he hired me, and I have become his priest." And we're about to see all the value of a hireling for a priest here. And they said to him, "Please inquire of Elohim that we should know whether we should journey, whether the journey on which we're going is prosperous." And the priest said to him, "Go in peace. On your journey, which you go, is before Jehovah." And then in verse 14 of Judges 18, the 5 men had gone out and spied out the land of the city of Lachish and said to their brothers, "Do you not know that there are in these houses a shoulder garment, an unum and thunum, and house idols, and a carved image, and a molded image? And now go, you know what to do." And so essentially these men go up to the house of Micah, and they sneak in there in verse 18. And they went to Micah's house and took the idols, the shoulder garments, the house idols, the molded image. And the priest said to him, "What are you doing?" And they said, "Be silent, put your hand over your mouth, and come with us. Be a father and a priest to us. It is better to be a priest to a household of one man, or that you be a priest to a tribe or clan in Israel." And the heart of the priest was glad. Again, a hireling, he's getting promoted in his eyes. You know, it's kind of like going from Church of God to Catholic Church, I suppose. Get a little more funding. And he took the shoulder garment and the house idols and the carved image and took his place among the people. And they turned and went. And they put the little ones, the livestock, and the valuables in front of them. Dropping down to verse 27. Then they took what Micah had made and the priest who had belonged to him and went to Lachish. And the people were at rest and unsuspecting, and they struck them with the edge of the sword and burned the city with fire. And there was no deliverer because it was far from Zidon, and there was no word with anyone. And in the valley that belongs to Beth Rehob, they rebuilt the city and dwelt there. And they called the name of the city Dan, after the name of Dan their father, who was born to Israel. But previously the name of the city had been Lachish. And the children of Dan set up for themselves the carved image. And Jonathan, the son of Gershon, the son of Manasseh, and his sons were priests for the tribe of Dan until the day the land was taken into exile. And they set up for themselves a carved image of Micah, which he had made all the days that the house of Elohim was in Shiloh. So again, we have very early on a false shadow religion set up on the side in the north there in the city of Dan in Lachish. And dropping down to, or jumping over to Kings, the first book of Kings, chapter 11, verse 9, another familiar scripture, all this, I'm not coming up with anything new. We find, "Therefore Jehovah was enraged with Solomon, because his heart had turned away from Jehovah, Elohim of Israel, who had appeared to him twice, and had commanded him concerning this word, not to go after other mighty ones. But he did not guard what Jehovah had commanded. And Jehovah said to Solomon, 'Because you have done this, and have not guarded my covenant and my laws, which I have commanded you, I shall certainly tear the reign or the kingdom away from you and give it to your servant. And then in 1 Kings 11:30, we see this being told to the man who had received the kingdom, who is one of Solomon's right-hand men. And the prophet Ahijah took hold of the new garment that was on him and tore it into 12 pieces and said to Jeroboam, "Take for yourself 10 pieces, for thus says Jehovah, the Elohim of Israel, see, I am tearing the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and shall give you 10 tribes. But he shall have one tribe for the sake of my servant David, for the sake of Jerusalem, the city which I have spoken out of all the, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel." You'll notice absent from this is the tribe of Levi, because the tribe of Levi was still to be serving God and taking as his inheritance to serve both houses of Israel and leading them to God. Verse 33, "Because they have forsaken me, the house of David, and bowed themselves to Ashroth and the mighty ones of Sidonians, to Chemosh, the mighty ones of the Moabites, to Milcom, the mighty one of the children of Ammon, and have not walked in my ways to do what is right in my eyes, my laws, my right rulings, as did his father David." And then dropping down to verse 38, Jeroboam's told, "And it shall be, if you obey all that I command, you shall walk in my ways and do what is right in my eyes, to guard my laws and my commands as my servant David did, then I shall be with you and build for you a steadfast house, as I built for David, and shall give you, give Israel to you. And because of this, I humble the seed of David, but not forever." And Solomon sought to kill Jeroboam, but Jeroboam rose up and fled to Egypt, to Shishak, sovereign or Pharaoh of Egypt, in the midst of Egypt until the death of Solomon. And 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 25, we see this is after Solomon's died, Rehoboam, his son, has had the kingdom ripped from him. It says, "Jeroboam built Shechem in the mountains of Ephraim and dwelt there. And he went out from there and built Peniel. And Jeroboam said into his heart," and Peniel, that's the house of God, where Jacob many centuries earlier had the visions of angels ascending and descending. And first time he spoke to God. "And he said in his heart, 'Now the kingdom will return to the house of David. If these people go up to do slaughterings in the house of Jehovah at Jerusalem, then the heart of the people shall turn back to their master, Rehoboam, sovereign of Judah, and they shall kill me and go back to Rehoboam, sovereign of Judah.' And so the king took counsel and made 2 calves of gold." Any of this sound familiar? You have someone that's spoken to God, been promised to God, seen his miracles work out, and yet, again, makes 2 calves of gold and said to the people, "It is too much for you to go down to Jerusalem." So, convenience. "See your mighty ones of Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt." And he set one up in Bethel, which again is the house of God where Jacob first heard God. And he put the other one in Dan and Lachish, which is in the northern part of the territory where Micah and his false idols had been set up. And this matter became a sin for the people. For the people went far as the one in Dan and made the house of high places and the priests of all sorts of people who were not of the sons of Levi. And Jeroboam performed a festival on the 15th day of the 8th new moon, which would just be in a few days from now, according to God's calendar. So we're coming up on this anniversary. And the festival, like the festival that was in Judah, and he offered on the slaughtering place. And he did at Bethel the slaughtering to the calves which he had made. And at Bethel, he appointed priests to the high places which he had made. And he made offerings on the slaughtering place which he had made at Bethel on the 15th day of the 8th moon, and in the new moon which he had devised in his own heart. And he performed a festival for the children of Israel and offered on the slaughtering place and burned incense. And then, again, God always patient and always trying to correct and teach people, didn't destroy the children of Israel, but he sends in a man of Elohim, a prophet, in verse 1 of chapter 13. And see, a man of God went from Judah to Bethel by the word of Jehovah. Jeroboam was standing by the slaughtering place to burn incense, and he cried out against the slaughtering place or the altar by the word of Jehovah, saying, O slaughtering place, O slaughtering place, or O altar, thus says Jehovah, see, a son is born to the house of David, Josiah is his name, and on you he shall slaughter the priests of the high places who burn incense on you, and the men's bones be burned on you. And he gave signs the same day, saying, this is a sign which Jehovah has spoken. See, the slaughtering place is split apart, and the ashes on it is poured out. And then it came to be, when the sovereign Jeroboam heard the saying of the man of God, who cried out against the altar in Bethel, he stretched out his hand from the slaughtering place and said, seize him. Then his hand, which he stretched out towards him, dried up, so that he's unable to bring it back to him. And the altar was split apart, and the ashes poured out from the altar, according to the sign which the man of God had given by the word of Jehovah. And the sovereign answered and said to the man of God, please appease the face of Jehovah, your Elohim, and pray for me, that my hand might be restored unto me. And the man of Elohim appeased or prayed to God, and the sovereign's hand was restored to him, and it became as it was before. And then we know that the house of Jeroboam was cut off. He didn't receive the promise of an eternal house because he turned away from God. A lot of turbulence in Israel. Many kings rose and fall. Eventually we have the house of Omri, which again lasted for four generations. Omri was the father of Ahab. And that house too served Baal and Ashtaroth to a great degree, and even destroyed all the priests of God which were left in Israel. And so we find in 2 Kings chapter 9, verse 4, that another was appointed to be king of Israel. So a young man, the young man and prophet, went to Ramoth-Gilead and came there and saw commanders of the army, Ahab's army, sitting. And he said, I have a message for you, O commander. And Jehu said, for which one of us? And he said, for you, commander. And he rose up and went to the house, and he poured oil on his head, and he said, thus says Jehovah of Israel, I have anointed you sovereign over the people of Israel, or over the people of Jehovah, over Israel. And you shall strike this house of Ahab, your master, and I shall avenge the blood of my servants, the prophets, and the blood of the servants of Jehovah at the hand of Jezebel. And all the house of Ahab shall perish, and I shall cut off from Ahab all the males in Israel, both those that shut up and those left at large. And I shall give up the house of Ahab like the house of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, and like the house of Baasha and Ahiah. In chapter 10, verse 28, we find Jehu had set about the work which God gave him and destroyed all the followers and priests of Baal. In chapter 10, verse 28, thus Jehu destroyed Baal out of Israel. However, Jehu did not turn away from the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, who had made Israel to sin from the golden calves which were at Bethel and Dan. And Jehovah said to Jehu, because you have done well in doing what is right in my eyes, and have done to the house of Ahab all that was in my heart, your sons are going to sit on the throne of Israel to the fourth generation. But Jehu did not guard to walk in the law of Jehovah, Elohim of Israel, with all of his heart. For he did not turn away from the sins of Jeroboam, which Jeroboam made Israel to sin. And in those days, Jehovah began to cut off some in Israel. In 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 20, 17:20 through 23, we see, and Jehovah rejected all the seed of Israel, and afflicted them, and gave them into the hand of plunderers, until he cast them out from his presence. For he tore Israel from the house of David, and made Jeroboam son of Nebat sovereign. And Jeroboam drove Israel from following Jehovah and made them to commit a great sin. And again, remember, Christ tells us that woe unto those who cause and even teach one of these little ones to sin. And the children of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam in which he did. They did not turn away from him until Jehovah removed Israel from his presence, as he spoke by a servant, the prophets. So Israel was exiled from their land to Asher, as it is to this day, the day when this is written. Then in 2 Kings verse 22, or as you were, chapter 22 of 2 Kings, we finally have fulfillment many generations down the road of what that prophet spoke to Jeroboam at the altar of Bethel. And Josiah was 8 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for 31 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Gedaliah, daughter of Adaiah of Botzquath. And sorry if I'm mispronouncing those names, but again, I don't speak Hebrew, and the scriptures has a little bit different spelling here. And he did what was right in the eyes of Jehovah, finally, and walked in all the ways of his father David, and did not turn aside to the right or to the left. And again, this will be one of the few kings that ever ruled where there's not going to be a big glaring but. You know, however, even for all of his goodness, he could not save the children of Judah, because God judges each man according to their works. In chapter 23, in verse 1, speaking of Josiah, it says, "And the king sent out, and they gathered all the elders of Judah and Jerusalem to him. And the sovereign went up to the house of Jehovah with all the men of Judah, and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem with him, and all the priests of the and the prophets and all the people, both small and great, and read in their hearing all the words of the book of the covenant which had been found in the house of Jehovah," which again, this is, I believe, the second or third time that it had been forgotten and refound in the house of God. "And the sovereign stood by the column and made a covenant before Jehovah to follow Jehovah, to guard all of his commands and his witness and his laws with all of his heart and all of his being, and to establish the words of this covenant that are written in the book. And all the people stood to the covenant. The sovereign commanded Eliakim, the high priest, and all the priests of the second order and the doorkeepers to bring out of the temple of God the objects which were made for Baal, and for Asheroth, and for all the host of heaven. And he burned them outside Jerusalem in the fields of Kidron, and took their ashes to Bethel." In the Kidron Valley, that was the Valley of Death, where they would have all the graves and such. And so that's what David's talking about, "Though I walk through the Valley of Death." It was considered a very unclean place. In 2 Kings, chapter 23 and verse 6, "And he brought out the Asheroth from the house of Jehovah to the Wadi Kidron outside Jerusalem, and burned them in the Wadi Kidron, and ground it into ashes, and threw its ashes on the burial sites of the sons of the people, and broke down the houses of the male cult prostitutes who were in the house of Jehovah." That's how far they had fallen. "And where the women wove tapestries for the Asheroth. And he brought out all the priests from the cities of Judah and defiled the high places where the priests burned incense from Geba to Beersheba. He broke down the high places at the gates which were at the entrance to the gate of Joshua, the governor of the city, which were to the left of the city gate. However, the priests of the high places did not come up to the holy place, the slaughter place of Jehovah in Jerusalem, but they ate unleavened bread among their brothers. And he defiled Topheth, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, so that no man could take his could make his son or daughter pass through the fires to Molech. And he did away with the horses that the kings of Judah had given to the son at the entrance of the house of Jehovah." And what that was a great idol that I believe Manasseh had set up that was just like Apollo. It was a golden chariot that was supposed to house the sun god to carry the sun across in its courses. And again, all this had just been lying around there for him to stumble on time and time again. by the room of Nathan Melech, the eunuch, that were in the court. And he burned the chariots of the sun with fire, and the slaughtering places that were on the roof of the upper room of Ahaz, which the kings of Judah had made, and the altars which Manasseh had made in the two courtyards of the house of Jehovah, the sovereign, the king broke down and rushed from there and threw their dust into the Wadi Kidron onto their graves. And the sovereign defiled the high places which were before Jerusalem, which were on the right hand of the mountain of destruction, which Solomon, the sovereign of Israel, had built for Ashtaroth, the abomination of the Sidonians, for Chemosh, the abomination of the Moabites, and for Milcom, the abomination of the children of Ammon. And he broke down the places and pillars, and cut down the Asherim, filled their places with the bones of men, and also the altars that were in Bethel, and the high place which Jeroboam son of Nebat had made Israel to sin, both that slaughtering place and the high place he broke down. And he burned the high place down to the ground and ground it to dust and burned the Ashtaroth. Then Josiah turned and saw the burial sites which were on the mountain, and he sent and took the bones of the burial sites and burned them on the slaughtering place and defiled it according to the word of Jehovah, which the man of Elohim had proclaimed, who proclaimed these words. And he said, "What tombstone is this that I see?" And the man of the city said, "It is the burial site of the man of God who came from Judah and proclaimed these matters which you have done against the slaughtering place at Bethel." And he said, "Let him alone, let no one move his bones." So they left his bones alone with the bones of the prophet who came from Samaria. And Josiah also took away the houses of the high places that were in the cities of Samaria, and the sovereigns of Israel, which the sovereigns of Israel had made to provoke. He did to them according to all the deeds he did in Bethel. And he slaughtered all the priests that were there and on the slaughtering places and burned men's bones. And he went back to Jerusalem. As you can see, we just covered the basic history of all the kingdom of Israel from the time they left Egypt all the way up till the time they were carried away. And in them, God time and time again showed patience and mercy and such. So what does it mean when God says that he visits the iniquity on the third and fourth generation? Well, if you ask me, I think it shows God's great patience, that God will hold off for a while his judgment. Thankfully so, because some of these people that I look back and say, why didn't you just zap them? You know, who knows how many of them are in my family tree? You know, I probably would have been killed a dozen times over. And I certainly am thankful God doesn't just zap me the second I walk off, but he's compassionate and patient and wanting to forgive us. And then that leads me to my second point. You know, sometimes when we're looking at stuff, there really is only one point, and that's enough to focus on.